America Meditating Radio Show. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts 24/7. Hi, I'm Sister Jenna. Join me and guests on Blog Talk Radio as we amplify stories that compel us to be more for ourselves and everyone else around us. Do you like to meditate? Have you tried to meditate? Have you struggled with meditation? Why don't you visit one of the Brahma Kumaris Meditation Center? Visit brahmakumaris.org.
The Miracle Medical Clinic is a clinic that has been providing quality health care services to the Houston area since 1996. In a comfortable environment, they are dedicated to helping you live a healthy lifestyle for years to come. For more information, please call 713-464-0236. Or visit us at our website at www.miraclemedicalclinic.com. The Miracle Medical Clinic, where preventive health care is waiting for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Sister Jenna from the America Meditating Radio, and I'm excited to introduce to you Meditate the Vote. It's going to be a national campaign, and what we're asking for all of you to join us with is to raise the bar of conversation. Try to see in what way we can change our interpretation about who we are, what we are, and perhaps the direction in which we want this country to go in. Regardless of whoever becomes the next president in 2017, we are still responsible for the way that we want to move our lives. So could you join me and an alliance of friends around the country to meditate the vote? Go to americameditating.org, press on events, meditate the vote, and you'll be able to get a whole bunch of information. So join us, because I, Sister Jenna, meditate the vote. Welcome, everyone, to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. You all have got to be in Washington, D.C. right now. I don't know if you're watching the news. It's a very powerful time. And what better time for us to really, really send out messages about Meditate, Devote? You see, this is what this is about. This is about us raising the level of consciousness, because people cannot operate at that level anymore. It's painful. I woke up this morning with the empathy in my heart for the Democrats that are sitting on the floor. And I know that this is going to be a pre-recording show, so you might be getting this a day or two later from this conversation. But please know that it's still very, very valuable for us to think about the empathy. The empathy we must be feeling for these members of Congress on the Hill who are trying to follow the system and the laws of government that govern this great nation, and say, all we're saying, you can't have folks of these time buying these sort of weapons as if they were in a war trying to kill 100 people who are attacking them. And it won't even be heard, and it won't even be accepted for vote. Meditate the vote, everyone. You've got to get on board with this initiative. I need you to go to your Facebook and your Twitter account and begin to follow the work that we're doing and share these stories, these videos, what you're feeling, and to ask yourself the question, are you powerful enough to effect change right now? And what do you want most from this country called America? We can't sit back anymore. I spoke to a few friends this morning and we were like, what in the world is going on? Mr. Smith goes to Washington. This is what it is. The filibusters are happening. But nobody wants to do it there. I don't know. We can't keep having these dysfunctional relationships with ourselves, a dysfunctional relationship with each other and colleagues when we're in a position of power, a dysfunctional relationship with the people that we promised that we were going to serve them to our higher good. This is a call to everyone on the Hill, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter. But you are God's children. And some of God's children are hurting other God's children because they're mentally struggling with themselves. And if they're given a right to go and buy automatic weapons and they're not mentally well, don't you think, regardless of how much millions or billions you might end up losing, or maybe someone might not vote you back in office, that it was worth the lives that you will save by voting against such? We are no longer in the days of Buffalo Soldiers or, you know, Wild Hillcock or Wild Wild West Pirate. But you do hear what I'm trying to say. This is Sister Jenna, a sister living in the city, doing whatever she can to be the best for herself, and knowing what that takes to sometimes go against what seems to be the norm, what seems to be what everyone needs you to do. Sometimes it isn't easy, but my brothers and sisters on the Hill, we are pleading with you. Turn on the lights. Make a vote. Meditate. Be introspective. And try to find out what it is that you need to do that's best for everyone. You're listening to America Meditating. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. Please stay tuned. We're going to have the wonderful couple therapist, Dr. Stan Tatkin, in. And we're going to be talking shortly to Stan about how best we can cope in relationships. But before we do, let's do what we do best here, and that is to have a meditation. In this meditation, I invite you to become aware of the two types of consciousness that reside within the soul. Let us choose the consciousness of light over the darkness of past stories, the history that gets into our way. Let us now remember our connection to the supreme energy, the supreme soul, the being of light. For far too long, we have allowed the external forces to dictate our inner force. And at this time, I choose to get off the grid and step inside the heart to be myself. I choose to no longer be under the influence of what the world tells me, what my parents have told me, my spouse, friends, or anyone who has been a negative influence in my life. In this meditation, I stand strong in the original, eternal, imperishable worth of the soul. I, the being of light, the soul of power, I step into the heart, and I become a being of love, a being of light and goodness. I'm dedicating that meditation to all of my brothers and sisters on the hill. Every one of you, get off the grid, turn your attention inside of your conscience and your heart. Do something that would please the divine, not just the moment of the ego, or the attachment, the limitation, or the power. Step inside in silence, and your answer will arise. We'd like to turn the lines to Sister Gita, who wants to read us something very inspirational as well.
Today, there's nowhere else I'd rather be. Good morning. I am inspired to read from insights and inspirations from leaders, men and women over the world, and new eyes is a topic. When we are on the journey in life, this journey in life, it is important that we look at familiar things with new eyes. Sometimes we will see things that we didn't see before. Each day, imagine seeing the world for the first time in a new way. Know what your mental models are and try to change them frequently. It can be hard to put into practice, but it is something we need to work on every day. I believe we all learn through intuition, in the sense that we gravitate towards certain people because there is something that attracts us to them. It is a sort of magnetism, something that comes from inside. We also sense from inside things that might occur in the future. Internally, if you know where you want to go, you will find people on your path that will help you. It is wonderful, but it only works if you are open to it. Every little conversation I have causes me to reflect upon what the meaning behind that conversation is. What it might be the media, it might be something. Call them all conversations. What am I supposed to learn from this? Is a good question to ask. What am I learning here? Thank you and have an insightful day. Om Shanti is a greeting of peace. No matter what's happening, we are beings of peace. The other things are stories. Om Shanti.
Thank you very much. I think when we look at things with new eyes, we break the shell of the ego that's been attached to a particular image or interpretation. So thank you very much for that. The America Meditating Radio is very proud to welcome Dr. Stan Tatkin. Dr. Tatkin is a couple therapist known for his pioneering work in helping partners form happy, secure, and long-lasting relationships, which we all know is not an easy job. But his method is called PACT. Psychobiological approach to couple therapy. He draws on principles of neuroscience and teaches partners to become what he terms secure functioning. Together with his wife, Dr. Tatkin founded the PACT Institute, which trains psychotherapists and other professionals from all over the world in this groundbreaking approach. He has a private practice in Calabasas, California, and is an assistant professor at UCLA's Department of Family Medicine. He's authored also several books, including best-selling Wired for Love and Wired for Dating. And today we're very proud to welcome Dr. Stan Tatkin. Thank you for joining us on the air today.
Hello, how are you?
Hi. Can you imagine?
Hi.
You kind of, I'm sure you must have felt my flame this morning with what's been going on the Hill, because I'm a very passionate sister. And I'm like thinking, what if Dr. Stan went on the Hill and gave those folks some couple therapy?
Yes, couple therapy, coupling the both sides of the House, both sides of the Senate. Wouldn't that be nice?
What would you offer them,
Doctor?
Yeah, Dr. Tatkin, what would you offer, what you're witnessing with the Democrats and Republicans at this time, to help them to find some sort of a medium?
Well, if we were talking about the way we work with couples, is, you know, like you are advocating in terms of mindfulness, but we go a step further as well in terms of, you know, listening, paying close attention, being collaborative, truly mutual, and adhering to a system that is fair, just, and sensitive. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we had a Congress that had anything close to that? That would be nice, huh?
So you specialize with couples, right? You've been specialized in treating people with personality disorders. You've worked with outpatient drug and alcohol programs. Dr. Tatkin, what has been calling you to be in what I would call is an area of service that requires an individual to have a lot of self-empathy or a lot of self-compassion? How did you get involved with this?
Well, through the years that I've been working as a psychotherapist, I've, you know, worked with a lot of people who suffer, and I became interested some years ago in prevention. Early on, I was interested in preventing mental disorders by working with mother-infant or caregiver-infant pairs, by working very, very early to prevent mental illness. And that shifted, and it's a long story, but that shifted into working with adult pairs, pair bonding, and the same thing goes here, is working towards prevention in making sure that adult relationships, particularly romantic ones, are secure functioning. And that's, as I said before, it's, you know, being in a couple bubble, in a foxhole together, having each other's backs, working collaboratively in a truly mutual system. And we believe that the couple is the smallest unit of a society. And whether partners realize or not, they are operating according to rules of social justice. And we're interested in making sure that those principles of social justice between partners remains fair and just and sensitive, as I said.
You know, it's estimated that the marriage breakup rate in America for first marriages is usually between 41 to 50%. So why would we even think of getting married? Can you tell me? Because that's a high percentage.
It's not really marriage, because even if the institution of marriage were to dissolve, and, you know, that's possible, there would never be an end to the need for human pair bonding. That's a biological need. It's wired in. So we'll always have to reckon with relationships, whether they're love relationships or deep friendships or, you know, relationships that involve governance, such as what's happening on the Hill. So, you know, what we're talking about here transcends marriage. It has to do with partnership. It has to do with people considering that they're not alone, that nobody is alone, that everybody must find a way to work not only with themselves, but with the most difficult thing on the planet, and that's another person. You know, as a meditator myself, my discipline is Vipassana. But I also know that while meditating is a wonderful thing, there is nothing harder than another person when you go live, when you are in the moment with that person, another brain that's operating, another nervous system. And, you know, this is the whole matter of love and war, how two nervous systems get along or don't get along. There's a lot of that going on right now where there's so much division, so much acrimony that people are having a hard time, you know, getting along.
What's the cause of individuals just not being able to come into a union with the best of themselves? I mean, doesn't everyone actually start out with that? What happens? Is it just that we have our own voids and we come into these marriages or into these scenarios thinking that the other person's going to complete us, and then we realize that we've picked up some luggage along the way with somebody else, and why in the world did I even choose this person? I mean, what has been lacking in these relationships when you listen to as many cases as you've listened to them? What would you find is the fundamental theme that's running through the breakdown of many relationships?
I would say probably is the misunderstanding of one's mind. Most people don't understand their mind. They don't understand how the brain works. They don't understand how their nature, their the things that happen that are faster than thought, than cognition. The way, as I said, the two nervous systems actually interact is so incredibly fast. In fact, it's faster than thought, that most of the time we're operating automatically. We're operating by memory. This is actually how the mind works. And because of that, because real time is too fast, and because we're operating automatically and by memory, it's very easy for us to trigger in others a sense of threat, a sense of, you know, when I say threat, I mean small T threat, not big T threat. It's just the look of the face as it does, you know, scowls, or the tone of the voice, or turning away, or a gesture. These, all these things in close relationships can mean the difference between love and war. And we're not really taught much about relationship early on in our lives. And we're not taught about how to deal with our own mind. We're not taught about human nature. And so I think all of, there's so many things, expectations of perfection, expectations of being heard again, you know, ideas about how to be in a relationship, whether it's a two-person system or it's just for me and me alone. There's all sorts of reasons why people aren't not able to sustain a long-term relationship. But a lot of it has to do with not understanding how our minds work.
I hear you. And how does our mind work? I mean, everything is about the quality of thinking. It's, even as we're having our interview, we're having thoughts. I'm trying to grab words that I think are speaking very true to me and also
yes.
to our incredible listeners. And you are also just sharing your experience of what you know to be true. And there are all these thoughts that are going on at the same time. So how do
yes.
we actually learn about this most powerful mechanism in the human soul, yet least paid attention to? Since that's the cause and the cure, any advice that you would give us and all of our listeners as to how we can nurture our thoughts better, or at least acknowledge them or recognize them more?
There are two systems here to consider. One is how to do something alone, how to manage yourself by yourself, and the other is how to manage yourself in relation to another person. We are interactive beings. This is what we need. Our mind, our brain needs to interact. We don't do very well by ourselves for very long. And our sense of self really comes from these interactions, comes from our being able to get along with others, to be able to consider others, to be able to love, and also, you know, have certain mechanisms, which through meditation, I think, are wonderful to learn how to self-regulate. I think meditation is wonderful for that. But eventually, we have to do something called interactive regulation, where you and I are eye-to-eye, face-to-face, and we have to manage each other, which is quite different than, you know, in our culture, which is you have to manage yourself. You have to deal with yourself. You have to learn to love yourself, which is, you know, something developmentally that's just not true. So I think the ability to be face-to-face, eye-to-eye, to be able to sit and look into a person's eyes as you think, as you feel, as you talk, and pay attention to that other person's face and body for cues as you would if you were meditating. In other words, if I were sitting across from you right now, as I'm talking, my eyes would be painting your face very carefully as I pay attention to every detail, your pupils, how your skin color is going. I'm tracking you because you're doing the same thing with me. This is what we call mutual regulation, where we are both in real time paying attention to each other, paying close attention and being present with each other. If we could do that more, that would be a huge step.
I like that. I like that. In my spiritual community, we do something that's called drishti. It's a Hindi word, D-R-I-S-H-T-I. And what it means is to maintain a spiritual, or rather, the highest vision from yourself to the other,
yes.
looking at them
yes.
with that highest vision, and then we usually greet each other and say Om Shanti, and then we talk about what is it that we need or what have you. And what I've found, Dr. Tatkin, is that when I really look at someone in the eye, I get a chance to check where my sense of purity and intention and motive is coming from, first for me, because I'm a thought checker. I'm a very, very avid thought checker. I know that
mm-hmm.
if my thoughts are not right, I'm not going to be in a good space, and I'm not going to be good for others that I have been preordained to be in service to. And so that method that you're offering is very rare. We call it open-eyed meditation or the drishti, but I find it to be very, very important. I want to talk about your incredible book, Wired for Dating. You debunk a number of common relationship myths, and I'd love for you to go over a few of them with us and explain why they're not true.
Well, for instance, you have to love yourself before you can love another. That's an impossible task that when you consider developmentally. The infant never learns to love itself first. This is something that's developed through the other. Everything happens from the outside in, from the beginning. And I would argue that it actually continues throughout life, that we live in a culture that has become a little bit too much tilted toward the me and the I, and away from the we, away from interdependency, which is really how we're wired. And so my sense of self, my sense of my being able to love myself is intrinsically connected and intertwined with my ability to love you well. And this is an interaction, and we confuse it often as something completely separable, and it's not. So that's one, that I have to be with my soulmate as if, you know, there's only one or two of those out there in the masses of people. That would be a very depressing thought, by the way, that I only have to find my soulmate by sheer numbers. That would be impossible, never happen. Instead, we tend to find people that we recognize. Our brains are only attracted to people that we recognize. If they're too strange, we walk away from them.
Can you say that again? Our brain basically gets attracted to the people that we recognize, only to what we recognize?
There's a biological drive towards procreation, and that's a different system in the beginning when we are attracted to somebody. But there's a difference between that system and the one that commits to another person. That if you and I maintained a relationship and then we started to become more committed to each other, we would only do that because we find each other in some deep manner familiar. Even familial. Our brain likes novelty, but not when it comes to pair bonding. So if you are with somebody that you decide that you're going to live with or spend a great deal of time with, chances are the two of you are more alike than you think. Again, there are all these different systems, mostly
non-conscious. Stop trying to scare me.
Well, why? It's a beautiful
thing.
No, you're right.
Right.
What's funny, though, is many people pick correctly in some fashion. But the person they picked, they still don't know how to handle, you know, the part of me that feels the way I did with my father when I'm with you. I still don't know how to manage. And so I'm fighting you as I fought with my father. This is why I say that we're mostly memory. 99% of our day is operating automatically. And that's strictly memory. So, and that's important because if we had to think everything through, we couldn't get out of the corner of a room every day. So nature has built in an economic system that allows us to move and think and act and react automatically. But that's all happening from memory. So when I start to get to know you, I begin to automate you like riding a bicycle, right? You learn a bicycle and all oars are in the water, and then you can do other things. You don't have to think about it. Well, the same thing after I'm with you, I begin to automate you and you automate me. Now we begin to predict each other incorrectly. We make all sorts of mistakes because we lose that sense of presence and attention. Literally, our brains think we don't have to do it anymore. I think I know you, and you think you know me, and that's when we start to get into trouble.
Right.
It's the presence and attention that allows me to see the strangeness in you and no longer assume that I know you when I really don't. People are too complex.
And it's interesting because you always hear people saying, you don't know me. You know, you don't understand me. You don't know me. And I don't know if this is just a deflect mechanism within my being. I feel like it's not my job to know you, but do you know you? Like, why do I have to know you? I'm saying, could you speak to that?
Well, here's where the idea of where we come from with PACT is a bit more radical, and that is when it comes to a couple, they do have a responsibility to know the other. They do have a responsibility to have each other's owner's manual, to be experts on each other, and that's through paying attention. And the reason we view it this way is because of, again, how we are biologically, genetically wired as human beings to be interactive. In other words, if you and I are in close proximity, it is much more efficient for me to attend and to know you and to know your cues better than it is for me to know me. And the reason is this. When I'm sitting across from you at a close distance, I can see what's going on in you before I can feel what's going on in me. It's a speed thing. You can see what's going on
That's
in me before I know it. So it's almost it seems nature has made a quicker, you know, a more efficient neuropathways or set of neuropathways for me to pick up your inner state through your face and your voice and your movements faster than I can pick up my own internal state. There's got to be a reason for that, and I think it has to do with love. I think it has to do with close proximity with two human beings, their ability to mutually regulate, co-regulate. And we know this is true from infancy. This is how it works. In the early years, the infant leads because the parent must locate the baby. But even when the infant leads, right after that, there is a system where you cannot tell who's leading or who's following between mother and infant. That seems to be the way we roll. We're better when we're paying attention outwardly to each other. In this way, we're in each other's care. Now, both people, they'll have to see it this way. If they don't, then there's problems, of course. This is where we're getting into a mutual agreement that you're in my care, I'm in your care, I take you as my burden, you take me as your burden, because we are burdens. That's the quid pro quo. We do this for each other because nobody else wants that job. And it pays out because we can be as burdensome as we need to be because we are in each other's care. And this does actually work out very beautifully for people. But it's a very hard thing to get into the culture and to get into people. So many of us have had bad experiences in our families where we weren't paid attention to, where nobody was interested in who we were, where people didn't pay attention to what was going on inside of us. And so then we go ahead in our adult life and we do the same thing with others. And the injury just continues over and over again.
What do they say? We become what we learn, or children become what they learn, right?
That's exactly it.
Right.
We are what we know, and what we know is what we've experienced, and that's really about it. Everything else is made up. And this is another thing. People don't understand that even on the best day, human communication is terrible. We mostly misunderstand each other most of the time. Our memories are not what they seem. Most memory is filled with non-memory elements. This is how even memories are laid down to in the very beginning. It's filled with junk. So our memories are not what they seem. And our perceptions change with our internal state. Perceptions, what we see, feel, smell, taste, hear, is like a funhouse mirror. It's affected by our internal state, which is driven by memory. So put this all together, and we really hang our hats on things that are unreliable, our own thoughts, our own perceptions, our own ideas of what the past really was. And, you know, it really is about the present moment. It really is about what you see, feel now, and checking and cross-checking with the person. Is this what you heard that I said? Did you understand what I meant? Am I clear? Am I seeing what I think I see? Am I hearing what I think I hear? And again, because I said that real time is too fast and we have to be handling things by memory, you can see how easy it is for people to go to war. It's so easy to misunderstand each other and to be threatened by things that weren't intended to be threatening, but were taken over by these primitive needs to survive. And if we're not careful, if we let go of the hubris that we have, that we know what we think, we know what we remember, and we're always right, then we're in trouble. Does this make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. It's a little bit new. As you said, it really is radical because in my own spiritual teachings, I would think that if I'm observing somebody else's behavior and I'm feeling something from it, especially if I'm feeling something uncomfortable, it's a sign that there's something sitting in me that's uncomfortable and I need to address that. But when you're a couple and you're seeing that, the question is, how much do I allow what I might view in you as a negative or something that's of a lesser sense of what I want in this relationship, how much do I allow that to impact me that it clouds my consciousness, it clouds my interpretation of you, and 5 years later I'm seeing the same defect in you and I'm not realizing that it's building momentum and it's building energy in me, and then I get so angry that you left the cap off of the toothpaste and I ask you for a divorce. And then the poor spouse is like, I don't understand what I did. I just left the cap off of the toothpaste. And no one can really explain where it all started.
you know, and we're not talking about infidelity or physical abuse or whatever. Becomes different.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on something that I haven't talked about, and I know we have to go because we're running out of time. But
okay.
You mentioned something about
secure
functioning, you know, secure functioning relationships. And that's huge because we're looking at a very insecure culture all around the globe right now.
Yeah. So secure functioning means that you and I have two, we acknowledge we have two separate minds, we don't expect to be the same, and that we think as a two-person system, if we are two or three or four or five or whatever, but it starts with twos always, that we're a two-person system, therefore, where I go, you go. If I move ahead of you, if I do something that you're not okay with, you go down, but guess what? I go down too. And this is the folly of this idea of independence, that we are independent in a way that we are really not, that when you and I get close, we become psychobiologically tied together. And if I go down, you go down. So it's a different way of thinking. More mature, that we have to work together. We have to create win-win situations. I have to put myself in your shoes. I have to be careful to be friendly so that I don't alert threat systems in you. And I have to do that because I know that we're two separate people and we have to move together. And that takes more creativity, more patience, and more interaction than many of us have patience for. But that is exactly how it has to be.
Right. Well, interesting. Well, Dr. Tatkin, thank you so much for making this a very, very rich conversation. And what I generally like to do when I end all of my beautiful conversations is to request our guests to leave us with information that our listeners can get more information on. And if you were to share with us your highest vision for yourself that you think would contribute to this country called America, what would that be?
Well, I think what I'm doing at the small level that I'm doing it at, working with pairs of people, I'm hoping this spreads. And as my wife and I take this around the world, we find that the idea of secure function is attractive everywhere we go, in Russia, Africa, no matter where we go, people are attracted to it. The question is, I think people like the menu, but will they eat the food? We're hoping that we can get people to eat the food.
Me too. Thank you so much. And your vision? I wish that Sister Jenna will always maintain the absolute amount of compassion and love that she possibly can until her final breath. And I feel like that's going to contribute to the country. Yeah.
Yes, for me, it's my growing, as I get older, my growing feeling of love for people. I want that to continue. And that overrides all ideas of myself being perfect.
Perfect. Thank you, Dr. Tatkin, and lots of good wishes to your wonderful wife, who I haven't met, but
I'm
sure she must be quite special, and wish you all the best with your book.
Same with you, Sister Jenna. Let's hope that this thing on the floor of the house works.
Same here. All the very best, my brother. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, these relationships, you can't live with them and you can't live with them. You know, it's just like, I keep saying, such a mess. Like, what happened? God made us so beautiful and perfect, and then all of a sudden, we just started to just act up, instead of act from within. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Stan Tatkin. I know I did. Please do visit his readings and his books, Wired for Love and Wired for Dating. His institute is called The Pact Institute, and it sounds like it's going to be doing a lot of good. Likewise, we end all of our show. No one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we are here to love each other the same. So I'd like to end today's show with Instruments of Peace and dedicated to our brothers and sisters on the Hill. Please, can't we all just get along? Take care, everyone.
desire.